just recently I had the privilege of saying Mass for about 300 seminarians. And the gospel for that weekend was taken from the fourth chapter of Matthew, and it was particularly appropriate for priests and seminarians. So I want to reflect on this, and my focus audience really is priests and seminarians, but anyone else that wants to listen is more than welcome to, because it has resonance really for any serious Christian. It's the story of the call of the first disciples. And we hear this, of course. As he, Jesus, was walking by the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon, who's called Peter, his brother Andrew, casting a net into the sea. They were fishermen. He said to them, "Come after me, I will make you fishers of men." So, a famous line, which resonates in the heart, I think, of anyone who feels a call to the priesthood, certainly. Fishers of men. He wants to fish people out of something. The implication is there's a sea that people are swimming in that is just not good for them. Well, it wouldn't be hard today to find what that sea is. It's the sea of a secularist ideology, which says you can be perfectly happy with the goods of the world. As I've said many times, this does great violence to the human heart because, as Augustine said, the heart is wired for God. Our heart is restless till it rests in God. We are ordered by an innate natural desire toward ultimate truth, ultimate goodness, ultimate beauty. And so no truth, goodness, or beauty in this world, no wealth, pleasure, honor, or power in this world could finally satisfy that longing of the heart, which is why the secularist ideology is a deadening ideology, why it is inimical to the spiritual structure of the human heart. And so the image to me of fish is a good one. Think of a lot of people today who are kind of floating around aimlessly, dead-eyed, glassy-eyed in this sea of the secularist ideology. They might have a lot of wealth and pleasure and honor. I run them all the time. I hear from them all the time. But they are like fish, glassy-eyed, aimless in the sea of secularism. Jesus wants helpers who can fish people out of this morass. And that's the call down through the ages. In some sense to every Christian, but I think in a specific way to priests, to be fishers of men. There's also a reference just prior to the section I read, and it was in the gospel that I preached on, where Matthew cites the prophet Isaiah, "Land of Zebulun, land of Naphtali, the way to the sea, Galilee of the Gentiles. The people that sit in darkness have seen a great light." Well, the reference there is to the region really where Jesus was from, up there in the kind of northwest part of the promised land. Zebulun and Naphtali were ravaged by the Assyrian invaders back in the 10th century BC. It was a land that was particularly affected by the Assyrian invasion. People were killed, imprisoned, many carried off into exile. The people that walk in darkness have seen a great light. The point is, people today in the grip of the secularist ideology are like people in the land of Zebulun and Naphtali. They're in the darkness of this spirit-deadening point of view. The people that walk in darkness have seen a great light. Well, the light is Christ himself, who's come into this place to bring light. Jesus is calling followers now to be light bearers to the land of Zebulun and Naphtali. Okay, so that's the mission. That's the call. How do you get there? What's required if you're going to do this work? Listen. "I will make you fishers of men." At once they left their nets and followed him. Now, you're a Galilean fisherman in the first century. Your net, so they would sort of cast these nets out that were weighted, and the net would go down and would catch the fish. It was the principal tool of a Galilean fisherman. The net, therefore, symbolized, if you want, livelihood, professionalism, their connection to the economic world. It meant security. If you took a Galilean fisherman's net away, you were taking away his livelihood. So they leave their nets. It means they left their preoccupation with livelihood and money and financial security. They let go of that in order to follow Jesus and to do what he wants. Now, listen to the story goes on. "He walked along from there and saw two other brothers, James, the son of Zebedee, and his brother John. They were in a boat with their father Zebedee, mending their nets. He called them, and immediately they left their boat and their father and followed him. So, two more brothers, two more fishermen, James and John, preoccupied, of course, with their nets, as any fisherman would, just as a person they might be preoccupied with his tools or with his car or whatever his professional vehicle is. So here they were tending their nets. They're in a boat with their father. They leave both boat and father and follow him. What's a boat? Well, it was an essential part of a fisherman's livelihood. But also think of it as a symbol of their own autonomy. If you're a fisherman on the Sea of Galilee, your boat, well, that was it. I mean, you were the captain of that boat. You were the navigator of that boat. You used that boat for your purposes. That was your life. Now they're saying, I'm abandoning boat. I'm abandoning my autonomy because I'm now going to get into his boat. I'm going to do what he wants. I'm going to go where he leads me. I'm going to follow him. They surrender their autonomy. Secondly, they left their father, Zebedee. There was no society, maybe ever in history, more family-centric than the society of Jesus' time. Your duties and obligations to your mother, to your father, your brothers and sisters, even your extended family, were enormous. They were life-defining. That's why it's so shocking, by the way, when Jesus says in the Gospels, to the guy that says, oh, I'll follow you, but first let me bury my father. Well, that's the most sacred obligation you can imagine. Jesus says, let the dead bury their dead. He says, unless you love me more than your mother and father. Well, that's an extraordinary thing. I mean, your mother and father, that was the most pressing obligation you had. Unless you love me more than them. Or the woman, how blessed are the breast that nursed you and the womb that bore you. No, blessed rather those who hear the word of God and keep it. Is he against families? No, but he's relativizing families. He's relativizing the claim of a family on you. What's most important is your relationship to him. They leave their nets, that means livelihood, money, security. They leave their boats, that means autonomy. They leave their father, that means all their obligations to the family. And they go after him. Now, for priests and seminarians, correlate these three things to three of the most important promises that we make. They left their nets. Diocesan priests don't make a vow of poverty, but we make a sort of commitment to simplicity of life. For us, money and financial security can't be paramount. They can't be. We eschew those. We accept the simplicity of life. Why? Because we got to be free. We got to be free to follow him where he wants us to go. We can't have our nets, as it were, entangled in all the values and goods of the world. Secondly, they leave their boats, leave their autonomy. One of the great promises a priest makes is to obey the bishop and his successors. So 28 years ago, I knelt before Joseph Cardinal Bernardin of Chicago. I put my hands in his hands, and I promised obedience to him and his successors. Well, I knew him a little bit, not real well, but I knew him a little bit. I trust what he's going to do. I know what to expect. But heck, I didn't know who Francis George even was when I made that promise. Cardinal Bernardin's successor, Cardinal George. I had no idea who he was. But yet I was making a promise of obedience to him. What was I saying? And indeed, that promise has had a huge impact on my life. Because of my obedience to him, my life has taken a whole direction that I never would have imagined. I left the boat. I left the boat behind. It wasn't going to be my boat. I wasn't in control. But rather, I'm going to follow the Lord. And then finally, priests make a promise of celibacy. And I want to press this in terms of leaving your father. It doesn't just mean that these particular people, my family, are now not the primary value of my life. It's also the demand and expectation of the family. In ancient times, as well as in modern times, what's the primary expectation of a family? Well, that you would carry on the name, that you would give rise to children, that you would be part of this great heritage. When you make a vow of celibacy, you're doing many things, but one of them is you're saying, no, raising up children to my father is not my main value. carrying on my family tradition is not my primary value, but rather generating spiritual children for Christ and the church. So I told the seminarians, think of these three things. They leave their nets, they leave their boat, they leave their father. As evocative of these three great moves, simplicity of life, obedience, and celibacy. Terrible burdens, onerous responsibilities. No, don't see them that way. See them rather as invitations to freedom so that we can be free fully to be the fishers of men that Jesus needs.